You're listening to the British Birth Stories podcast, the place where mothers from around the country share their birth stories. I am your host, Ashley Brennickmeyer, and I'm so glad that you're here. On this week's episode, I have the pleasure of chatting with Rebecca Robinson from Norfolk. She tells us a story of her journey through 2.5 years of unexplained infertility and the challenges that that brought along with it. She did happen to fall pregnant naturally just as she was about to embark on her IVF journey, and she tells us the story of her birth and postpartum period with her first son. She ended up having a BBA, which is a birth before arrival, which is essentially sort of an accidental free birth with her son. And when the midwife arrived, they found that he had respirated meconium, so he had to spend 10 days in the NICU. And she also shares very candidly, which resonated deeply for me, the first 6 months postpartum and her experience with that. Then she also tells us about her pregnancy with her second, which was essentially a pregnancy all during COVID, and she gave birth at home via a planned home birth in October, just before the second UK lockdown. I also am aware that I am still working on my interview skills, so I just wanted to give a shout out to Rebecca for being patient with me and also everyone who listens. And without further ado, here is Rebecca. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Becca. I'm so excited to hear your birth stories. Let's jump right in. And can you tell me a little bit about where you live and who you live with and a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Becca Robinson. I live in Norfolk and I live with my partner, Jamie, and our two children who are 3 and 7 weeks today.
Were you trying to fall pregnant with your first when you did?
Yes, so I'd been trying to fall pregnant. Well, we'd been trying to fall pregnant for about 2.5 years. So it was a really long journey. I've got polycystic ovaries, and I think anyone who has been trying to conceive knows that it is a really dark time in your life where you get really obsessed about things. And so that went on for quite a long time. And we were actually just about to start IVF treatment. We went through the NHS route of getting referred and getting tests. And so we were just about to start IVF. I was waiting for my period to start so that I could get a blood test and start the medication when I found out that I was pregnant. So I'm one of those very lucky people who didn't have to go through treatment, but I sympathize and have a lot of empathy with people who have been in that period of trying to conceive and it not happening.
And then were you out the gate, were you having any pregnancy symptoms, or how were you feeling?
So I found out I was pregnant at about 4 or 5 weeks and felt fine up until 6 weeks, and then I had really bad morning sickness up until about week 16. So I was just vomiting, felt nauseous, couldn't really eat anything. So it wasn't great in the beginning. I think I was just really shocked at how anyone could survive this and do it again. But you forget about it fairly quickly, I think, afterwards. But apart from that, my pregnancy was quite straightforward. I was very lucky. I was low risk, but just the sickness and the exhaustion, really.
And did the sickness and exhaustion, did it taper off after the first trimester, or did it stay with you a while?
It stayed with me till about 16 weeks in my first pregnancy. And then I got sick again from about week 32. Not as bad, but just really nauseous and really bad heartburn. So it was kind of on and off throughout my pregnancy.
It's interesting how that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm having the same.
Yeah, the end bit is I just remember feeling really awful up until the baby like drops a bit. I think the just compresses your stomach. But it's hard. I think being pregnant, some people are lucky and have, you know, straightforward pregnancies, but it can be really, really hard. And I think no matter how much you want the baby and you want the pregnancy, it's still a hard slog, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I also feel like it's quite difficult to articulate that because I feel like you're just supposed to feel grateful.
Yes.
But pregnancy can be so hard.
Absolutely. And especially if I think for me, because, you know, I'd kind of been quite vocal about my like journey of trying to conceive. And I think then not complaining, but, you know, saying, oh, this is really hard. I feel really awful. Everyone would be like, well, this is what you wanted. Why? But you know, you can't really prepare yourself, especially with your first pregnancy, for how it's going to affect you mentally and physically.
Yeah, absolutely. And then did you know what avenue of care you wanted to go down at the get-go, or what did you end up choosing?
We live in Norfolk, which is quite a large rural area. So there's only three hospitals. So you go to your closest hospital. I went through the NHS our midwife was linked to our GP surgery. So we were lucky to have the same midwife throughout my pregnancy, in my first pregnancy. And from the start, I think I wanted a home birth, and that's what I initially asked for, and they're really supportive of that. But during my pregnancy, I had to have quite a lot of growth scans. So because of that, I did become a bit anxious that I would have quite a small baby. So like, I think at about week 34, I had a discussion with my midwife, and we decided that it would probably be better to have a hospital birth. I wanted the midwife-led birthing unit that we have at our local hospital. And so that was my plan at that time. Luckily, I didn't need to be induced because of a small baby, but I did have to have quite regular scans, and that was quite stressful.
Yeah, I can imagine. So the plan was always going to be home birth during that pregnancy then?
Up until week 34, I think, because I was having to see the consultant, and they kept on saying, well, you have to come back in 2 weeks, and if the baby hasn't grown, we'll have to induce you. And it was always kind of borderline whether they would want to induce me early. But I got to about 38 weeks and they said, no, you're safe. But I think because of all that uncertainty, I decided to opt out of home birth and opt for the midwife-led birthing unit.
Also, I'm going to do an interview faux pas and just circle back, because I don't think I gave quite enough space for the unexplained fertility. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay.
I'm going to hop back, because I think that will resonate for a lot of listeners and women, because that also is my experience when I was trying to conceive, and it gets really dark. So I really just want to allow, if you want to talk about that a little bit more, it's easy to glaze over it, but there's a lot of depth to that.
Well, I think, well, me and my partner had been together for probably about 10 years by that point. And we're like, right, we're ready to start having a family. I think because I'd always had really irregular periods, I think in the back of my head, I knew that it would probably not be straightforward, but I wasn't quite prepared for how long it would take. So I did, like, changed my diet, did acupuncture, did reflexology, just kind of tried all these methods to try and boost it. And obviously then was, you know, tracking and just thinking about it a lot. And it felt, a lot of my friends around me were having babies and having second babies. So it did feel quite isolating. And I didn't really know anyone that had been through that, you know, a period of trying to conceive. But we were quite lucky that, because I was like 27, 28, we kind of wanted to give it, the doctor said, you need to give it a bit more time before we'll refer you for any treatment. We had tests and we're just about to start. You know, I was all mentally geared up for having IVF, which is quite a huge undertaking in itself, and had done a lot of research into what that would entail and how to make that most successful. So it was quite a big shock, really. A very welcome shock to find out that I'd got pregnant naturally. But I think maybe just having that, I don't know what was happening, but maybe because I'd been so focused on trying to get my body in a good place for IVF, maybe that helped, but who knows?
Yeah, truly, who knows? I'm also interested as well, because I've heard from a few people that depending on like the catchment area that you live in, it totally informs how long the IVF treatments, how many IVF treatments you can have, and it can literally vary just by the next street over. So I was just curious what your catchment was.
So ours was actually really good at that time, and I think it is still now. So we're in the Norwich Clinical Commission. It's all done by Clinical Commissioning Group. So ours is the Norwich Norfolk one, and I think it was three rounds of IVF if you were eligible for that. And then I think even if you have had a baby, because a lot of trusts won't even give you any investigations if you have had a baby or your partner's got a baby from a previous relationship, but ours will still do investigations after your first child. So I think there is quite a generous offer there. So we're quite lucky.
That's nice to hear. I was also looking into IVF before I somehow fell pregnant, and I don't know why I fell pregnant when I did, but I remember also feeling so stressed about how I only had a certain amount of runway with IVF. Yes. You know what I mean? Like if you don't get pregnant within those three sessions or goes, it's like, then what? That's, you know, it. Just the heaviness. It's unreal.
Yeah. And you kind of start thinking that, well, if it doesn't work in those three, then we just need to keep saving and, you know, looking into the private, you know, that it's just so expensive privately. It's, you know, really, well, it just makes it a huge privilege for anyone that can afford to do it. But your mind just goes into some places that you don't really want it to go to, thinking so far ahead in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you find anything that helped kind of keep your spirits up? Because it's just such a long trudge.
I think just having friends to talk to. I've got some really supportive friends around me. So I think I was just really lucky, and a really supportive partner. And, you know, at that time I was still working, you know, I was working full time and just kind of keeping busy. So I think that helped a lot.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing a bit more on that. I think that's really important to talk about. So thank you. Again, interview faux pas. Let's jump ahead to where we left off around 36 weeks, I guess, and just talk to me a little bit about, or us about, when did you feel the baby drop? When did you think, I guess, just what did the pre lead up to labor look like?
So I think because I'd had quite a few friends that had babies, and like most of them had gone overdue in their first baby, I was kind of prepared for it not being, you know, for there being a bit of a wait. And I think because of all the kind of concerns about the growth, I was just kind of felt like, well, if the baby needs to be in there longer to grow more, then that's absolutely fine. I think I kind of felt as though the baby had like dropped and engaged probably from about 38, 39 weeks. And I had two sweeps. I had one at 40 weeks and then 5 days later, so 40 plus five or six. And both times I was already like 2 to 3 centimeters dilated, and they were like, right, you're going to have your baby really soon. It's really exciting. But obviously after the first sweep, that didn't happen. So that's why they got me in quite quickly for another one, because I'd had seen the consultants. They'd made me book in for a induction, at 40 plus 10, which I was kind of open to as well, just whatever needed to happen. But I was also very keen to have a natural labor as well.
So let's go ahead and have you tell us your birth story, basically. What happened after the second sweep?
So after the second sweep, they were like, oh, you know, felt the baby's head, and it was just quite strange. But they weren't painful for me at all, I think, because I was already quite quite dilated, really. And I'd been having acupuncture and had been kind of doing all these natural, you know, induction methods, like eating pineapple and going for lots of walks. Just, you know, I didn't really expect them to do anything, but when you're waiting for your baby, that's, you just kind of do whatever you can, really. And then, so I was 41 after my, so yeah, I had the sweep on the Friday. I kind of thought it was going to be born on the Saturday, but he was born on Saturday. So I woke up, I was 41 weeks exactly, woke up and I had a really good night's sleep the night before, luckily, and just kind of felt completely normal. Went down, made breakfast, and then I think probably about an hour after getting up, I did start having what felt like contractions. I hadn't had any Braxton Hicks throughout my pregnancy. So I didn't really know what they might feel like, but I just knew that something was happening. Was really excited, told my partner, I was like, right, I think it's going to start today. Let's go and get ready. Put on some music while he had a shower, and like bounced on my birth ball and just, started, you know, just thinking about what it might be like. I'd done a hypnobirthing course, throughout, like during my pregnancy. And so had, you know, had kind of prepared myself for what I would like labor to be like and what I can do to breathe through the contractions and things like that. So I then went up and had a shower. And so during that time, the contractions started getting a lot more intense and quite a lot closer together. So I then, after that, just was trying to get dressed again, but everything just kind of kicked off with my contractions. They were really, really intense, but still quite short, but they were close together. So I just felt like something wasn't right. It felt far too intense to be early labor. So I called up the midwife-led birthing unit, who told me to wait. They said, oh, it's your first baby. You haven't been in labor very long. Take a paracetamol, have a lie down. And at that point, I couldn't move. I couldn't move to lie down. I had to be on all fours in my bedroom. So I put on my TEMS machine and thought, well, I thought it can't be this quick. This is my first baby. You kind of expect it to be at least 12 hours, if not longer. I started to time the contractions then, and they were about 30 seconds, 45 seconds, but coming kind of every 3 to 4 minutes. So I said to Jamie, can you just call them back again? So he called them back and was speaking to them. I think they said that they were full, they're at the same hospital. So they were like, we'll just go and talk to the delivery suite. And at that point, I felt like I just had to go to the toilet. So I went and felt the amniotic sac coming out. So I just shouted to Jamie, hang up, call an ambulance. Like, there's no, you know, they were, gosh knows what, you know, we weren't going to make it to the hospital. And I just felt really, really out of control. I just remember feeling really scared, despite the hypnobirthing, just because I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know if this was normal or if I was unable to manage early labor, or, you know, who knows. But I just knew that I wanted some sort of healthcare professional there quickly. So he called the ambulance, who luckily arrived very promptly. And they came and kind of spoke to me. And at that point, I was kind of in the bath and blessed, and they looked at my birth plan and saw that I wanted a water birth. And they're like, should we fill up the bath? And I was like, no, this is, you know, I just want to know what's going on. One of them called the midwife team to decide whether it was safer to leave me at home or to try and transfer me to the hospital. So they decided to stay with me at home and called the community midwife team. And in that time, my baby boy was born. So he was born very quickly. I don't remember pushing, really, just 3 pushes and he was out. And the paramedics delivered him in the bathtub at home. So it was very, I think altogether, I think the recorded time is about 2 hours for the labor. So yeah, that's, wow. I suppose that's how he was born.
Wow. That's a lot to process so quickly. How are you feeling at that point?
I was in complete shock. I remember just kind of saying, like, wow, he's here. That's amazing. I didn't feel any rush of love, really. I think I didn't have any kind of time to process what had happened. Shortly after he was born, a midwife did show up, did come, and they helped move me from the bathroom to the bedroom. And she delivered the placenta. The paramedics wanted to cut the cord, and I said, no, I want delayed cord clamping. So they were, you know, left with the cord for a long time. And my partner could cut the cord, and we had some skin to skin time, but I was just shaking. I was just in complete shock. And I just kept on apologizing, because I think I felt that at the time I felt like it was my fault that it had happened so quickly. I was like, well, I should have gone to the hospital. I shouldn't have had to call an ambulance. I'm sure that they had, you know, I felt like they had much more important things to be doing. So I think I just just felt completely out of it really. You know, I was cuddling the baby, but I didn't feel really any connection to him at that time.
Sorry to interrupt. I just was curious, were you able to, the placenta, was it delivered physiologically, or did the midwife deliver a shot?
No, I had the injection. I think because I was so in shock, and at that point, you know, I was just like, I didn't really mind at all what, you know, my preference had been to deliver it. I think the thing is, you think a lot about, I think it's like, it would be really nice to deliver it. But when, after you've had a baby, you're just like, well, if the baby's here, anything else is, you know, if it can be delivered naturally, that's brilliant. But I'd take the advice and just have an injection.
And then what did it look like with the care providers? How long did they stay with you? And
so after about an hour, he wasn't latching, he wasn't feeding, and he was really cold, and he was kind of starting to grunt. So they suggest, I also had tearing, so the midwife said, oh, I think we should get you into hospital to have your tear repaired and just to get the baby warmed up. Looking back on it, I had recognized that there'd been meconium when he'd been born, and he had it all over his head, bless him. But that kind of, I think they'd noticed it, but I don't think anyone had kind of really noted it. So I went into hospital in the ambulance, and Jamie stayed to clear up a bit and then came later. So when I got to the hospital, I went up into the delivery suite and was met by a midwife, and then the paediatricians came to warm up my baby, and very quickly he was just sort of whisked away, and I didn't really, I was just kind of, oh well, he's just going to go and like get some treatment, and he'll be back, you know, I should have, you know, is looking back on it, I was like, why on earth did I ever leave him? I should have stayed with him, but kind of at that point I was just still in complete shock really. So I had a cup of tea and some toast and had stitches. And then a doctor came back and said, oh, your baby's really poorly. We need your consent to give him treatment. And I didn't really understand what had happened, like what was wrong. So I just kind of said, like, what's happening? What's the worst case scenario? Because he wasn't able to breathe properly. And asked if I could go and see him. They said, no, he's kind of in his treatment right now. We'll let you know when safe. And so I was just kind of moved then to the recovery ward. And they tried to put me on like the ward beds where you've just kind of on with a curtain. And I think I just was, that's kind of when everything hit me, and I just was hysterically crying, because obviously everyone there's got their baby, and I would be on there without a baby, which I think they then moved me to a private room, and my partner came. So we were just, you know, trying to work out what was going on really. And then after, I'd have no idea what the timeline was, but they came and kind of explained to us what had happened. He'd inhaled meconium when he'd been born. So his lungs were full of meconium and he couldn't breathe properly. So he was fully incubated on 100% oxygen, and was on morphine because he was full term. He was obviously a big baby and was kind of fighting. He had a feeding tube. And was just in a box really. So we got to see him briefly, and we're kind of told, like, well, we have to see how he does during the night. And one of the NICU nurses was really lovely. I just cried basically for the whole time I was in hospital, and they were really lovely and kind of explained to me what was happening a bit more, and gave me like the colostrum. I wanted to breastfeed, so I was given colostrum syringes and started expressing, and then was given a pump. So it was like some of the worst days of my life. The first 3 days of him being in hospital, we couldn't hold him. We had to sit by his little cot, and hold his hand and talk to him as much as we could. And we were also in there with some of the really, really tiny, poorly babies who had been born at like 22, 23 weeks. So it was just like a really intense space to be in. Everyone had a lot of, you know, it was really emotional, and babies were really up and down. Luckily, after the first 3 days, he started to recover. He was taken out of his, he wasn't incubated. He still had a feeding tube and was supported, but we could finally hold him. So I think that was one of the best moments, was being able to finally cuddle him, because we hadn't been able to touch him really. And I just spent my days pumping in the hospital really. So that was the kind of first, we were in hospital for 10 days. So he was in kind of separated from us for 9 days. I was on the recovery ward, and then I was moved. They had rooms in the NICU, so I got to stay in the NICU, which was really good. We were really close to him then and could visit, like, spend more time with him. And then after 9 days, we had like a day of him being in the room with us to try and establish breastfeeding, and then we were finally discharged and got to go home. In some ways, going home was really tough as well. Because you're kind of so supported and in such a bubble in the hospital. And then, although, you know, it wasn't always the best support in terms of breastfeeding, at least there was always someone there to ask. And also, we didn't have like full care of him for the first over a week of his life. And then he was just with us all the time. And that was like a new shock as well. And obviously, I think I was still traumatized by what happened and by what happened to him, and he was very traumatized. He was had really bad, you know, who knows what it was, colic or reflux. He was a very difficult to soothe baby, so he would just cry and wouldn't sleep. So it was just a bit of a really difficult transition to being a new mum.
And how did you find the midwifery care?
So I think I called them every day just because I was so worried that something was wrong still, and feeding was difficult. So my midwife, who I'd had throughout my pregnancy, came to visit me in the NICU, which was really lovely. And then she came on the kind of, you know, day one or day three. And I think after about day three or four, when she came and I was still crying, she was kind of gave me a bit of a pep talk, like, you've got to get it together a bit more. Everyone's really worried about you. So it was a bit, you know, it was a bit shocking, I suppose, to be kind of spoken to a bit like that. But I think at that time it was what I needed. And then I kind of felt like, oh, I'm not getting the right support with breastfeeding. So I went to, I got a private lactation consultant session, and that really, really helped. Because he was kind of struggling with weight gain as well. So that helped get breastfeeding sorted. And she diagnosed a tongue tie that had been missed. So once kind of all those things were in sorted a bit more, I felt a bit more able to manage. And then we were discharged from the midwife.
And was that around day 28?
We were there for as long as you could be. So yeah, it was day 28, I think. We were under them for a long time.
And then did you find any of the health visitors helpful?
Not really. I think we had one who showed us some like baby massage techniques, but overall, I think we had a couple of visits. Not very many. And I took him to get him weighed regularly because we were still under the NICU healthcare team. So we had to go back at like, you know, 6 weeks and 6 months. And so we kind of had quite a lot of appointments for him still. So I don't think the health visitors really could add much to that.
Was there a turning point when things started to get a little bit easier, did you find?
I think maybe from about like, I think the fourth trimester with him is a bit of a blur. And it was, I think, I was definitely like depressed and traumatized. But I think after about 4 or 5 months, it started to lift. And I think I was able to enjoy him and being a mum by about 6 months. But it wasn't all you know, we had some really lovely time together, but I think I just was still processing. Like, I couldn't sleep. Not that he slept, but I was sleeping really badly. I was having a lot of flashbacks to the birth and the time in hospital, and just had a lot of health anxiety about him as well.
How did you know you were ready to start trying for your next baby?
Yeah, I think definitely for the first, I remember getting home for the first few weeks and being like, never again. You know, I'm done. You know, I can't do that again. But I think when he was about 18 months old, started to think about it a bit more. I breastfed him for 2 years. So I started thinking about it, and I think because of our journey before, I thought, well, it may well take a long time again. So I think, we started trying when he was about 18 months old. And it, after about 6 months of it, you know, nothing happening, I decided to stop breastfeeding and see if that helped. And I think, and during that time as well, because we were eligible still for further investigations, we did have that after 6 months. So we were about to start kind of seeing if there was any other treatment that we could do, because I think they said, because of my history and polycystic ovaries, I'd be eligible for treatment earlier. So yeah, I stopped breastfeeding him after he was 2 in the December. And then we had our first appointment in March. And so we went, and one of the tests they do is like a internal scan to check your womb. And she said, she looked and said, I think you should take a pregnancy test. So another huge surprise. I was pregnant with my partner, which was really lovely, because last time I'd taken a test and you know, told him over the phone, so it was quite magical to like be able to find out together.
Oh, absolutely. I'm smiling so big hearing that. Oh, and then how did this pregnancy start for you? Was it similar to your last, or was it completely different?
It was quite similar. I had the sickness again. I think this time I was better prepared for it. I was dreading it. I found out it was about 5 or 6 weeks. I was like, oh, I've got about a week of feeling all right, and then it's going to hit. But I'm lucky to have family support nearby. I was able to kind of have help with my little boy, and my work are incredible. I'm a social worker, and they're just really supportive, and they have been throughout both my pregnancies. So they, you know, let me, and obviously at this time COVID was kicking off as well. So I think somehow it was quite nice being able to work from home. Although at that point, I think, when I was feeling at my worst, I was having to work and do full-time childcare, because obviously you were in full lockdown. So it was quite a challenging time, but it was really similar. I was sick until about 20 weeks. But we made it through, just about.
I think that's another one of those pieces where that it's easy just to say that in a sentence where it's like, it was really hard, but we made it through. But
yeah, I mean, it was really tough. Like, I basically had to just work in the evenings and at weekends. So it was just like me and my partner had no time together. I'd just fall asleep putting my little boy to bed every night and get up and just do it all again the next day. We did a lot of like trying to lie down and play, but I've got quite an active, full-on guy. So there was not a lot of chill time, sadly.
Yeah, it's not really the pregnancy maybe it's one would not, have envisaged.
No.
Oh, man.
I think it kind of brought everybody closer as well in some ways. Made it, you know, having going through those hard times. But yeah, no, second pregnancies, as you know, are not the first. Like, you know, I did enjoy being pregnant much more this time, actually. I think because I kind of knew, like, oh, you know, rest when you can, but you can't do any of the nice things that I did before. Like, there was no pregnancy massage and no pregnancy yoga. I think I did enjoy it a lot more this time. I think because I knew what to expect and how to kind of manage my symptoms better as well.
Absolutely. There's a lot of peace that comes with that.
Yeah.
Did you opt to go through the same healthcare avenue, or what did you choose this time?
No, we had the same. And this time we'd move. So, I'd moved house before, so we'd had a different GP surgery, but none of that mattered because obviously COVID. So it was NHS again. And I didn't see a midwife until I was about 28 weeks. Just had some phone appointments, and obviously, so I had to go to all my scans by myself. And I'm just really glad that it was my second pregnancy. I really feel for people who's had to go through that with their first pregnancy, or anyone that's got a complicated pregnancy as well, because, you haven't got anyone to share those worries with at your appointments. So I basically saw a different midwife every single time, which I think was actually quite good, because I was really anxious about giving birth again. I was so, so worried that the same thing would happen. I think I blamed, part of my trauma was I really blamed myself. I felt like, because if I'd have just opted to get induced and, been more open to a more medicalized birth, then that wouldn't have happened. And I think speaking to different midwives really helped put that into perspective, that it could have happened whether I was in hospital, whether I was at home, whether I was, wherever I was, that could happen. And it does happen. So I think that helped give me a little bit more peace and think about how I can feel more in control of the birth this time. They kind of, said be prepared for it being really quick again. It might not be, but you need to be prepared for it being. And I did like a kind of hypnotherapy like rebirthing as well via like a Zoom therapist, which actually was quite useful. I think just kind of processing it a bit more again, because I'd kind of hadn't thought about it for quite, hadn't thought about the birth for quite a long time. So that really helped kind of process all of those feelings around it.
I'm just really curious about the hypnobirthing rebirth. Is it similar to like rewind therapy, or could you just tell me a little bit
more
about
that? I think so. So you kind of, it's like a visualization where you you kind of put yourself in the space of your then unborn baby. So like in my little boy's head space, and kind of talk to him, and then kind of imagine a point at where you kind of felt that it was, a kind of trigger point, and then like visualize something different, like a different outcome. Is that what rewind therapy is like? Yeah.
So I've done both EMDR and rewind for my birth trauma, and they have a lot of overlapping themes with what you just said, but I actually think what you did is more similar to EMDR, where without the bilateral stimulation. So basically you scan your birth story. I love from the point of view of your baby. That's quite lovely. This is more so from your own point of view. And then you scan your story for like a point of disturbance is what that's called. And then you just check in with yourself and see what you notice. And then you try to reframe it and say, what would you like to choose to believe instead of like, I'm powerless, it's my fault, that kind of stuff. And just reframing it. It's quite effective. So I just,
I hope it's been useful for you. Cause I did listen to your birth story, and it's just, it's heartbreaking really. Cause there's so many other factors that kind of happened. And I suppose part of it is you kind of have to. They also offered like a birth, what's it called, birth reflections at the hospital, which I did do quite shortly after I'd had the birth, and they kind of go through your medical notes and kind of talk you through it to try and kind of explain the medical decisions that have been made.
For your first birth,
for my first birth, which there weren't, because it was an ambulance, like it was the paramedics, there weren't very many notes. But I think it was, I think I just wanted to understand why the meconium had been missed. But there, there's no, I suppose you can't go back and change anything, but it did kind of help me understand a bit more about where the medical professionals were coming from.
And then under midwife-led care, did you opt for a birth in the hospital, or did you consider a home birth this time? Tell me a little bit about that.
What I need to do is accepting that at that point, I felt like I had so little control over my body, and what was happening is what can I do to help me feel in more control? And kind of everyone was kind of saying, so you're going to have, give birth in the hospital this time because, you'll have your medical professionals there if anything goes wrong. And actually, I think I felt that knowing if it was even quicker than last time, like trying to think about getting in the car. We don't live very far from the hospital, but even thinking about getting in the car and doing that felt quite overwhelming. So I decided to opt for a home birth. and like hired a birth pool and just thought, you know, at least then I feel like I've made my choices, and just kind of see what happens. I'm open to going to the hospital if they think that that's what's needed. But and my midwives, well, the variety of midwives that I spoke to were all really supportive of that as well.
Oh, that's amazing. It's always nice when you don't have to fight for what you want.
Yeah, I think they kind of said like, that sounds like a sensible idea to us. You know, we can come out and see you, and then if it's taking a long time and you feel like, you know, taking longer than you expect and you feel like you want to go to hospital, then you can do that as well. But I think the idea of having that, you know, they can come out and see you early on in labor, and just kind of give you a bit of advice and guidance there as well.
Well, let's go ahead and jump in, I guess, to your birth story the second time around. And also, I know it happened still. Did it happen in lockdown? The second round of lockdown,
so,
actually?
Yeah, just before. So it was the 25th of October. So just before the second lockdown. And we were really lucky, like in Norfolk, I know from listening to your other ones, is that home births were kind of cancelled. But throughout, like even in like March and April, Norfolk was still doing home births. So I never kind of had the worry that that would be taken away, you know, or changed. And I think because also I knew that they'd just kind of, you know, even if there was any issues with staffing levels, which is, you know, I've had friends that have wanted home births and there haven't been the staff available. They've kind of said, well, you just need to call an ambulance again. And they'll find someone if they have to. So I'd started acupuncture again as well, because I think my main being overdue can be a factor in babies passing meconium as well. So I was quite keen to not be overdue. So I'd started doing acupressure and acupuncture and lots of walking. And it was 39 weeks exactly. So it's a Saturday evening and I started having really mild contractions. I'd had a lot of Braxton Hicks actually of this pregnancy, which was something that was really different. And I was just at home and was like, oh, okay, this is, starting. So my partner was like, right, get the birth pool, get it all, you know, get everything sorted. And I called the midwife. They were still really quite mild and irregular. And because of my history, they said, well, we'll come out and see you. And they came out and did an examination and said, you're about 3 centimeters. You know, if you feel okay, just, you know, see what happens. You can call us back. We'll have you flagged for being, that you're in labor, in early labor. So if anything changes, we can come back quickly. And after about being up for about an hour and a half, nothing really changed. So I was like, well, I'll just go to bed and see what happens. And so I had a night's sleep, sort of. My little boy was still gets up in the night and comes, you know, we still sleep with him for part of the night. So it was a bit of a wriggly night. But I woke up in the morning and was like, well, I was kind of expecting, you know, it to be really, really quick again and to escalate quite quickly, and it didn't. So I was like, well, maybe I'll just be in early labor for days and days. So I'll just kind of carry on about my day. So I took him to the park and then met up with a couple of my friends and went for a really lovely walk. And it was during this walk that my contractions became more intense. So I was like, well, I should probably go home. I thought that if I had a little lie down, they'd probably stop again, because that's what had happened in overnight. But when I got home, they were still quite intense and getting closer together. So got family members to come and pick up my little boy. Poor little thing. It was getting quite intense then. They were lasting quite 30 seconds, but they were every kind of 2 minutes and becoming more painful. And as much as I advocate hypnobirthing, I'm not a quiet, breathing through everything, kind of serene woman in labor. So I was kind of becoming more vocal. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye to him properly. But I think he was quite excited to go out anyway. And my partner was filling up the birth pool, and I called the midwives, and they said, yep, someone will send someone. Sounds like, you know, you're in labor. And then after about 20 minutes, no one had showed up. So I called them back again and they spoke to my partner who they said, well, someone's on their way, but we suggest that you call an ambulance as well, just in case. And at that point I then had, the show and was bleeding. I felt like it kind of kept on going on. So I was bleeding quite a lot. And again, all fours was the only position that I could tolerate. So I was just kind of in the kitchen on all fours, trying to breathe through it and shouting through it. And then the midwife and the paramedic showed up at the same time. So, she sent the paramedics away, and kind of came, and she was doing the monitoring and just kind of guiding me through it. And, because my contractions never became very long, I was like, gosh, is this, you know, am I in late? Like, you know, what's going on again? She was like, it was just really nice to have, a midwife there to say, yeah, this is normal. They're just, you know, short and intense. I was still bleeding quite a lot. So I asked to get in the pool. And she said no. So sadly, I never got to use the birth pool. It was just kind of sitting there in front of me, taunting me a bit. But I was, you know, just trying to get through it. And because there was a lot of blood, once she said, well, you know, you need to start pushing, just in case we think that your placenta might have hemorrhaged or there's a problem with the placenta. So it would be, you know, and asked my partner to call an ambulance again. So I felt like my partner was kind of on the phone quite a lot and kind of talking to people. So he wasn't like very present in there to support me, which was a bit difficult, but I was just, you know, in the zone really. I think because I knew what to expect a bit more, and knew, that, you know, when it was normal and, you know, it was, I was kind of in the later stages of labor approaching, you know, or in transition even, because I was kind of saying, I can't do this. It's too painful. I just want to go to the hospital. You know, how do I make it stop? And they're just like another midwife had come at that point, because obviously they thought that I was close to giving birth. It's like, this is normal labor. You're doing really well. You know, it was nice to have a bit of encouragement and support as well. So I had to push, which I hadn't really experienced with my first birth, and I was kind of pushing and didn't really feel like anything was happening. So asked for, you know, just to check to make sure I was dilated enough, and I know it was just the most painful thing, having to lie on my back to be examined. But she said, yeah, you're definitely dilated enough. Just keep pushing. So it felt like a really long time of pushing, but probably it was only about 20 minutes, which is still really, you know, really, really quick. And, and then she was born, and we'd found out the gender in my first pregnancy, because I'd been convinced it was a girl. And then it was a boy. So, and in my second pregnancy, I think I was so convinced it was a boy because in my partner's family, there hasn't been a girl born for 150 years. So all the way through, we're like, oh, it's another boy. It's fine. We've got two boys. It's brilliant. And then it was a girl. So we were just so completely shocked to find that out. And I was just so, and my waters didn't break in either labor right up until the end either. So I was also really relieved to see when they said clear waters and the baby's here, and just wanted to make sure that she was okay. Which she was, which was brilliant. And, I think the second labor just felt, it was, and they recorded the time as about an hour and a half, which again is, you know, really quick. But I think because I'd had early labor, it felt as though I was more prepared for it happening and had got kind of everything in place to feel a bit more in control of everything.
And did you feel different this time, that you had a little more of a run up?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it really helped. Although I was bleeding a lot, once they gave me the injection again to deliver the placenta, and it was absolutely fine, I think. It was just a lot of blood. So everything was kind of all right and straightforward. And yeah, I felt really different. I still felt in shock. I think just because your body's gone through something so huge. So I had really bad shakes, but just had a cup of tea and a biscuit and just got to lie on the sofa and have skin to skin. And kind of be just a lot of relief. And just, I don't know, it's just always really weird when you've just got a new baby and you look at them and adore them. And then you're like, well, still got to like eat and drink and go about my day. So she was born in the afternoon. So we had a really nice afternoon and evening. The midwife stayed for about 2 or 3 hours, and just kind of did their checks and weighed her and, you know, made sure that I was okay. But we just got to stay at home. So I felt really, really lucky not having to go into hospital during the COVID time. Another one of my huge worries had been if the baby was poorly and having to go into NICU because of the really tight restrictions on the NICU. In Norfolk, you can, like, parents can only visit like once a day or something. And it just, I don't know, it breaks my heart thinking of especially the really premature babies who are in there for weeks and weeks and weeks who are looked after by strangers really and don't get to have that time with their parents. So I was really, really concerned about that happening, but just feel very relieved that it didn't.
And then how did you find feeding this time? Did you choose to breastfeed again, or what did you end up doing?
Yeah, breastfeeding again, and it felt much more straightforward this time. I think because I was more relaxed about it. I think part of the problem before as well was that because I'd established my supply on a pump, I had a really big oversupply. So would get really engorged and he'd struggle to latch and then have to use nipple shields. Whereas this time, I've just been able to kind of, you know, feed her from day one really and haven't had the same kind of issues. Or if I have, I've kind of known that I was over engorged and just too express of it and help her latch on. She's, you know, they've all children are just so different, and she's just a really different baby that she, you know, I don't have children that sleep sadly, but she's just a bit more chilled out and hasn't got the same kind of digestive issues. And so yeah, it's just been a really different experience.
And how has, I mean, your postpartum period has literally fallen over the second lockdown, so how did that inform postpartum care? How did you find that?
So I was really lucky to have, so one of the midwives that was there for the delivery, we had two home visits, and then, I took her to be weighed at, like the hospital clinic as well before we got discharged. So we were discharged on like day 12 or something. So there's not the same like close support, but, I think we were just lucky to have the same midwife come as well.
And again, I'm always curious about the health visitors. Did you have any help from them, or are they stopped?
They've stopped. I think some of them are still doing home visits, but the one that I've been allocated is not. So I've had two like virtual calls, which just, you know, not really of any use. I've taken her to get weighed at like a self-weigh clinic once. But other than that, there just isn't really anything, isn't any support available. I think there's still some like lactation consultants running things. I did have like a Zoom, like a virtual breastfeeding support, just because I was a bit worried about her latch, which was really useful. And that was run by one of the kind of lactation consultant companies. But it's just really sad, isn't it? That there's just all the support has fallen away. And actually, what is the long-term impact of that going to be for mums and babies' mental health and well-being?
It's so true. It's really overwhelming to try to digest.
Yeah,
it's not right.
No. And I understand that people have got to take kind of informed risks with themselves, but you know, I think hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel, but it's, you know, there's the whole year of difficulties that are going to come in the future.
I also wanted to ask too about, did you have a turning point, or was it always just a little bit different postpartum than with your first
around? I'm still kind of, only 2 months in, not even that. So I think just because, you know, we've got a routine with our little boy, and my partner's working from home still. And it just kind of feels like there isn't the same shock to the system that having, you know, being a first time mum is. The kind of difficulties are in, you know, emotionally supporting my older child with adjusting to life as a big brother, more than anything else. So it just feels really different. Like, I think that it's, like, I suppose that I don't get the same time with her as a newborn that I did with him. But so I think that's the difficult thing, just kind of feeling like I'm not giving either of them enough. But I think that's, from speaking to friends that have got two children, that's quite normal as well. And hopefully it'll get better in time. But yeah, I think like in terms of like well-being, I'm a crier, so I definitely was like teary for the first couple of weeks, and just kind of felt really guilty about not being able to kind of, you know, meet both of their needs to the way that I would hope to. But I think that's me as a perfectionist as well. So after that, I've definitely felt like more like myself again.
It's nice to hear that, because I've been a little bit apprehensive because I'm about to follow suit. Oops. So yeah,
good luck. So
it's thank you.
Yeah. All children are so different as well, and you know, and how they adapt, and I'm sure that you'll be brilliant. And just be really kind to yourself, because you can't do everything. And I read something the other day that was, because I was like, oh gosh, I've ruined his life, but actually the greatest, you know, they've got a lifelong relationship with each other, and it's hard now, but you know, when they're adults, they'll have each other. Hopefully they'll get on well enough and just have someone else in the world to share life with.
I'll try to remember that when it gets tough. Well, thank you so much, Becca, for coming on the show today and bearing with my interview skills.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Thank you. I really appreciate it. To talk about it, because he's just turned 3, so it's, you know, it feels like quite a long time ago, but actually it's really not. And you know, just I think giving, no matter how positive birth you have, it's still a huge thing to undergo, and I think really, you know, talking about it is just really important.
I so agree. So thank you for sharing your stories here. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode and hearing Becca's story. If you'd like to see or read more, please head over to BritishBirthStories.com for more. See you next week.